Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey guys, it's Malls. Thanks so much for listening to Please Advise. Just a quick message before the show. Don't forget to subscribe in iTunes. It's super helpful for us and super helpful for you. You can also call 323-450-7408 to get your calls on the show. Again, 323-450-7408. Or email askpleaseadvise@gmail.com with your voice notes or emails. Thanks so much. Hey guys, it's episode 119 of Please Advise. I brought someone that I enjoy very much, my friend Dan Mario, here today. You guys might know him from working with Chelsea Handler for many, many years. Most specifically, I just realized this. You're the one. You and Jenny Mullen and Jenny Mullen Biggs and Chelsea did ayahuasca together.
That's right,
yes. I totally forget that about you, but that was you. Okay, so first of all, what's it like to work with Chelsea? Tell me that.
I do like working with her. She's a good friend, but I appreciate her space in the talk landscape.
Yeah.
I feel like the talk landscape has a lot of people who are it's very plug based.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit kiss assy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's like a scrappy, authentic person.
You know, I have to say that on her talk show, I've always had a problem with, for years, I've believed that they need to stop making celebrities promote their movies on talk shows, because I've never walked away from like a David Letterman interview being like, wow, I like that actress so much more now. Like, but on Chelsea, I definitely have. But I've heard, like, I've read her book that's, like, all of her employees, like, co-wrote this book about what it's like to work with her and just being pranked and stuff like that. I thought she seemed really fun. I've only met her once. I was a little buzzed. And it was backstage when I was doing, I was going to be a guest on Whitney Cummings' talk show, Love You, Mina. And Chelsea came in the back room to, like, kind of see how everyone was doing. And, of course, Ed, my best friend, was there as an assistant to on Whitney's show. And I just said, Chelsea, I said, this is my best friend, Ed. Don't steal him. And she laughed at me and she just laughed. She goes, okay. And I think she respected that I literally just looked at her in the eye and said, don't steal my best friend. And it was so weird. And I expected her to gut me.
Yeah, like, I think she probably sensed that you were a no bullshit person.
Okay.
She's someone who doesn't suffer anything. She walks away from people. But I mean, when you have a talk show, you have to promote whatever the person's promoting to a certain extent. But I do like we just did an interview with Jessica Chastain.
Mm-hmm.
She sat down and it was for promoting Mrs. Sloan, I think the name of the movie is. And just the second thing she said was like, what is that? That movie's about the gun lobbyists, right? She goes, that sounds really boring, so we're not going to talk about it. Anyway, what do you want to talk about? And
yeah,
I don't know. There's not a lot of people who do that.
I mean, that's true. It's what I want out of a celebrity interview. But okay, so now I need to know about the ayahuasca, because for years it's been a secret dream of mine. I've had really bad experiences with mushrooms for the most part. But I have had really great realizations. So like the next day has always been amazing, but the night that I'm on them is hell. And so, I've wanted to do ayahuasca because it feels like obviously a contained experience. It's something that everyone kind of has the same journey. And it is hell to go through. But once you get out on the other side, you've done a lot of work. And because I like to go 10, like I'm not going to do a soft 5 with the mushrooms. Like I'm going to go 10. Like I'm going to shit myself and vomit in the woods and then come out a better person.
And I think that's why I said yes ultimately, because I talked about it with my wife and I was like, she was pregnant at the time and I was questioning whether or not I should go.
Yeah.
And ultimately we were like, well, you have an opportunity to go into the rainforests in Peru with a shaman.
Yeah.
That sounds like a pretty cool opportunity.
Like, who gets to do that?
Sounds like a real adventure to me. And that's what it was. It was a real adventure to actually stay in this place. That, like, if we had to make a phone call, we had to use, like, a satellite phone. Like, we were out there.
But night one was brutal, right?
I only ended up
doing night one.
She did it two nights in a row.
But Chelsea seemed to have so much fun on the second night. Like, or not so much fun, but, like, a much more calm experience because she was, like, kind of strapped in for it. She knew what to expect. Did you regret not doing a second night when you saw that her experience was so much more euphoric and what this drug is supposed to do?
I had a pretty amazing trip, actually. This is a cool opportunity to tell people what happened to me, because obviously that show, that episode needed to be all about her perspective more than anybody else's.
Tell me what happened.
I had an amazing experience on it. You definitely get sick. I remember I was really sick to my stomach, and I didn't want to be on camera that sick. And I actually didn't throw up or shit myself or anything like that. But I thought I was going to puke, and I didn't want to puke on a bucket. In a bucket.
Yeah.
So I got up and I managed to go to this bathroom. And it was, every surface of this bathroom was covered in some kind of insect, dead insect. And it was, and I shut the little curtain and I looked around and I was like, what the fuck have you gotten yourself into?
Yeah.
I was like, you have a beautiful family at home and you have a nice house. And I was like, Why would you do this? Why would you leave your home to go do this? Because I'm not an actor. I'm not like...
Right.
I'm not promoting myself usually, you know?
But it is a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
It felt like a cool experience.
And by the way, the fact that you're on TV almost like bums me up, because you have to think like, I don't want to puke in a bucket on TV, but if there hadn't been cameras there, you'd just be like letting it rip, right?
It was a little bit of a compromise setting. There was cameras. The light wasn't as low as it should have been.
Right.
I managed to go back, and it was like a half hour, 40 minutes in that it kicked in. And it was like I was like a vesselless. It was like my spirit without my body floating through space. That's
okay.
And I was, you're just sort of meditating and you're listening to the guy chant, and I at one point felt myself like, it was like I came out of like an ectoplasm, like, and I was spit out into my childhood backyard. And I used to share my backyard with my grandparents lived behind us. So we had a shared backyard, and I loved my grandparents. It was like major comfort zone. Like, and it was so strange, the details that drug allows you to recall.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it was like, I was there and there was this sense that it's 1983 inside that house right now. Mm-hmm. It's 1983 right now. And I'm here and I'm looking in that house, and my grandma's still alive and she's in the house back there, and I'm walking around and looking at stuff, and you still have this awareness all the time where you're like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, because the drugs seemed to promise things that were too good to be true.
Yeah.
For me, it was like, what kind of realizations are you actually going to have?
Yeah.
So I walked into my house that I hadn't been in since I was in fifth grade or something. And there was our kitchen, and I walked down the hallway, and I'm like, oh my God, remember this wood paneling? And like, oh my God, I walked into my childhood bedroom, and it was like, those are the shelves that my dad built for me, and those are all my G.I. Joe toys. And I'm like walking over the shelves and looking at stuff. And then I turn around, and it's me as a three-year-old sitting on the bed.
No way.
And then there was some kind of like edit in time. And then I'm holding me now is holding me as a three-year-old. And the whole time you're like, you still have this bizarre, for as impressive and amazing and expanding as the drug is, it's such a strange feature of it that you have this awareness of the whole time that, like, you can, if you needed to throw up or something, you would just do it and help yourself and take care of yourself. But like, that whole time you're experiencing this and you're like, holy shit, this is really incredible.
Yeah.
And then I had these thoughts come into my head of like, you have to be a great dad. Like, you're old enough to where, you know, you're your own man now. You're your own father in a way. Like, you have to be a great dad to your kids. And it was just like this very basic revelation.
Yeah.
But very powerful.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was just guilt driven from being away from my family, since that was so much on my mind.
Yeah.
But it was still wild.
And then did it end? Did it end in that room? Did you stay there or did you go to other places in your life?
That was it for me. That was like, that happened over the course of like an hour. And then Jenny and Chelsea, like Jenny was in rough shape.
Because I remember, that's funny that you say that, because Jenny's whole thing was like, and I was kind of, I mean, I have to say, because I can be a little cynical because TV, I was a little cynical that Jenny might have been crying about how much she loved her son because she had just gone through all that press stuff where people were giving her shit for having her get like live tweeting her birth or whatever. That makes so much sense though, because all she kept saying was just like, I just love my son so much. And like, that's kind of the exact...
Yeah, no, I believe it. It's like it's on par with the same revelations that I had, which is, I mean, it's a long way to go to. It's a long way to go to realize something that should be implicit, right?
Right.
And it's basic, but.
But it gives you a visual you've never had.
It does give you a vision. I mean, it's an amazing experience. It's crazy. I never would have. I don't think on my own I would have experienced something like that or had a vision like me holding myself. It's almost embarrassing to talk about because it sounds
so... No, it's
so
super cool. I'll tell you like fully, like my takeaway from every mushroom trip I've ever done is that I'm not a bad person and everything's going to be okay. Like, and I never realized till I'm on mushrooms how much I fear that I'm a bad person and that things are not going to be okay. And then like that has always been the and I'm thankful for it. And it's been this like it's been like you should know that. Like you should know that it's life. Like it's going to be things are going to progress. Like
no, it's really hard to it's easy.
Yeah,
to get
and it's
up.
Nice.
It's easy to get caught up and you're in the middle of something and you're I don't know. Yeah, I mean it's the same thing. It's so funny. There's so many people who drink so much but they judge people who
I
do
hate
drugs.
That.
And I think alcohol
the worst
like,
thing it's poison
far worse it's, poison. It's far more insidious than
absolutely weed. I think than most things to be honest I mean I think alcohol is one of the worst things and it's so weird that it's legal but anyway listen but anyway, I think we have a bunch of calls for you that we could start taking do you want to do this okay
let's
calls.
Do it let's do it
hi most Christina and guests I'm Annie I'm 30 and I live in Los Angeles. And I'm going to try to keep this concise. I tend to ramble, which might lead into the reason, of, you know, regarding my question. What do you do if you have very frantic energy? I do yoga. I'm in therapy. But ever since I was little, it's hard for me to connect with people because I've always been told I come off very weird. And I've actually been called by an ex creepy. You usually don't get questions about when a girl's creepy. It's usually, oh, the guy's creepy, but I don't know what it is. You know, I try to just be very, you know, I listen to people. I try to be very calm and, you know, kind of limit my jokes. You know, I'm a writer and creative person. It's hard to explain, but when I meet people, you know, I usually kind of get blown off. Or I'm told by a friend, like, oh, you know, Annie comes off very strange. Or when I first moved here to Los Angeles, I had a friend who introduced me to another friend. And he said, oh, email me sometime. And said, oh, we can all get together. You don't know anybody. I sent him one email. And he asked my friend, why is that creepy, ugly girl emailing me? And I'm like, what? Once? And ugly, that's really rude. But... and I've asked friends, I've said, why do you think I'm weird? How do I come across to you? And then they're like, well, no, it's just something about you and you wear hats and you don't like cheap wine. Like that doesn't make sense either. So I know I'm rambling, but I would love to know, how do I just embrace it and just be myself, or do I have to read a book, or do I just say, fuck everything, yes, I wear hats, and I'm a little odd, but you'll love me anyway once you get to know me. Thanks, Miles. Please advise.
What do you think, Dan?
I mean, I feel like I'm friends with a lot of black sheep.
Totally.
I feel like we're in a city of black sheep.
Totally.
And I get doubting yourself. I get that move that you're talking about where you're so worked up and so self-conscious. And I think you can learn to let go of that. I don't think anybody really cares.
Well, I don't think she's a black sheep. I think she's like a neon pink sheep. Like, and I keep it very real with these people. They know if they're calling me, I'm going to give them the real, honest truth. I'm very, very sensitive to energy. And I feel like someone like Annie would really throw me off. And I like there once I met this like actress or whatever, and like after meeting her, I literally said to my boyfriend, you need to pull the car over, and I threw up because her energy was on a hummingbird's level. And I was so physically drained after talking to her that being in her presence, that I was just like, I need to like get this out of me. And I feel like if the consensus is that this girl has once you're hearing something over and over and over again, it's one thing, you know, that that email where that guy called you ugly, he was wrong for that. But like, if you're hearing over and over and over again the word creepy about your personality, that's specific. And I think that you could talk to a cognitive behavioral therapist about kind of some energy management, because it's not about the hats and it's not about the fact that you won't drink cheap wine. However, I did write down like snobby question mark on my thing, because maybe this creepy energy is fueled a little bit by, in the past I've met girls who have kind of creeped me out because they are very they were helicopter parented and just like very like that, like are not used to the average things in the world and can't like roll with the punches, and they give off a weird toxic energy. And I'm wondering if that's true of you, and maybe sounds like you're aware of it and you've heard this enough. There's no like cure all to get rid of it. It's almost like a mood disorder a little bit when you're functioning on a really high energy level like that. It's manic.
I sympathize with, I guess I kind of relate though. I get all in my head.
You do.
I get kind of face locked. I get quiet. So,
but Dan, you're not like that. Like, I don't think if you went into a room of 10 people, like when you leave, like Christina's not going to be like, how about that guy? Huh? Well, like there's been people that we've had on where like after the fact, we're both like, I need a shower, dude. Like that was rough. We had a guest leave. We both cried because we needed to release like the energy of that person. Sometimes, no one says that about you. So that, like, I think that Annie is, I agree with you. I want to sympathize too and be like, look, there's plenty of people where I feel like misunderstood, or they don't get my personality, or I can be cripplingly shy and it comes off as bitchy. I'm bad at small talk. I know what my problem is. I think these problems are something that she really needs to work on, especially at the age of 30.
I wish I knew what she was saying to people. And if she's not saying anything to people and she's getting called creepy over and over again, then that is a valid point. If you're hearing something over and over again, it might be true.
And I don't know if she's trying to be funny or not, but...
No, she sounded...
But when she says she's 30 years old and like, maybe it's just that I wear weird hats, like, girl, like, it has nothing to do with the hats. This is LA. Like, I literally have a bandage taped to my face right now, and I'm about to go to the weed store after this and then like go on a video podcast with my face bandaged with a napkin. Like, people pull shit off here all the time. That's weird. Your hats are not the problem. There's an I think there's really an energy issue, and you are probably just go to therapy and start taking a UCB class or something. I don't know. I think she needs cognitive behavioral therapy, probably.
Did you go to therapy?
I mean, did I?
Yeah.
Do I go to therapy?
Oh, yeah. You go now?
Yeah, I go all the time. But I've never had a frenetic energy issue.
Yeah, maybe you need to exercise.
That's actually true. Know. When you have a lot of energy to burn off, but frantic, like, it sounds like you have a lot of anxiety. And have you looked into that? I don't know. I mean,
I wish we could call Annie.
I mean, Annie, call us back with more details, because I want to know more about this, more specific situations. I know I often say that the details are not necessarily necessary, but in this situation, I think we need more details, because it's not the hat. It's not the cheap wine. Even though I do think that it can be annoying when someone's like being a snob, I also agree that it's up to you what you put in your body. And when someone has gross liquor, I don't drink it. But you're hearing creepy a lot. And I need to know more examples of why creepy. And what were you emailing the person about that? I mean, maybe these just aren't your people. There was this girl back in the day that was like dead set on dating a friend of my boyfriend's, and they were all a bunch of guys, like, lived in a house, and like, she would call me crying and be like, they were just so mean to me. Like, they made fun of me. And I'm like, leave. Like, why are you there? Like, why are you hanging out with guys that make you cry? Like, because you think you want to date one of them. Like, he obviously doesn't want to date you. Like, maybe these people, if they're calling you creepy, maybe they're not your people. I don't know.
That could be a big part of it.
Yeah.
If she's trying to hang out with people that are rejecting her, then like, yeah, why hang out with those people? But I don't know. I think you have to chill out. Like, that's what I hear, like, so much self-doubt. And you can't operate from that place.
Because if it was like she was getting drunk and acting obnoxious, she would have mentioned that. She, like, we know by now that people would be like, and yeah, I drank, but like, we didn't get that. So I'm really interested to know more. Annie, as soon as possible, call us right back. 323-450-7408. Let's take our next call.
Hi, Molls. Hey, Christina and guest. I just called and I'm in like a weird cough medicine haze. So I think that it made zero sense. So I figured I would just clarify. So basically I just called because there is this dude, I dated him over the summer kind of, and I acted real crazy with him. I was like, you know, going through something and acted really, really weird. And so we both kind of pulled away from each other. But the thing is, I live in a very, very tiny vacation town. There's like a population of 250 year round. So literally every time I leave the house, I run into him. And we've kind of started up again. And not really, I mean, we've just developed this, like, weird flirtation. And he does, like, things for me that are, like, above and beyond. Like, he bought me 4 brand new tires because he decided that mine weren't safe. And, like, it's not like I'm, like, in a place where I can't buy myself new tires. Like, I'm establishing myself here and I'm like starting a life. I was totally about to buy new tires and he knew that and he just did it for me anyway. And he gets like really protective and defensive with me. Like when people talk to me at the bar or if he finds out I went to like a party or something and somebody was hitting on me, he'll like get real weird about it. And he like is really protective of me. But he's also, like, a former pro snowboarder. He's really probably the most attractive guy in the town. And every girl wants to hook up with him, and he just basks in it, and he flirts with them all. And in ways where I can't just brush it off and be like, oh, he's just flirty. It seems like he's probably hooking up with them. I'm like, I don't want to get all weird and crazy with him. like I did over the summer. I really am trying to keep a realistic perspective with him, but everybody keeps telling me that they think we should be together, that they think he wants to date me, all this weird stuff. And I'm like, just need a realistic perspective, because while I want to believe what people are saying, I think they're just feeding into my delusion, and like they're just kind of saying what they think I want to hear. And like, I just need like a kick in the ass, because if this guy's hooking up with a bunch of other girls, then I don't want to waste my time with him. This is a tiny town. I'm trying to establish my life. I don't want to be the crazy girl that's like obsessed with the one like town flirty flirt dude. I'm sorry. I am on cough medicine. I'm a mess. But I just need some realistic outsider perspective. And yeah.
Okay, so we both agree that there's kind of a disconnect here, and I think I figured it out. I think that, okay, we thought that we were like, but she never really said she's like super into this guy, right?
There's a glaring omission. There's a glaring like,
but
at no point in time, yeah, I really want him, but I'm too afraid to make the leap.
Okay, so when she said she went all crazy on him last summer, what I'm seeing as crazy in this scenario is that's her asking for the define the relationship conversation, because guys make you feel crazy for trying to have that conversation. Like, dude, we were just hooking up, and like now you want me to be your boyfriend? Like, that is what crazy, like I went crazy and I had this whole conversation with him. And what crazy really is like trying to have an adult mature conversation and establish where the boundaries are in your relationship. Guys make girls feel crazy for that. So I'm thinking that that's what happened. And then, you know, after she, I think that she probably put the pressure on him to be in a relationship and stop hooking up with other girls. And then they drifted apart because he was freaked out by that. Also, when they dated, it was summer, so it was prime time for this hot former. I mean, like, why would you, if you're a hot former pro snowboarder and you can get any girl in town during the regular year, why wouldn't you be hooking up with all the summer girls, right? So I'm thinking that that is what she means, and she does want to be in a relationship with him right now, but he's flirting with all these girls in front of her, and that leads her to believe that having any sort of define the relationship talk or take it more seriously would be perceived as creepy, and once again kind of screwing over herself in this very, very small town where there's not many options to begin with.
How would you feel if a man bought you tires that you could afford yourself?
I mean,
how would you receive that emotionally?
I would think that he really likes me and cares about my safety. And
it's
and,
a very, yeah, it's a caretaking. It's something you would do for someone you wanted to look after.
And I think that there's a lot of romantic stuff going on. And part of me, when I think, you know, him, I don't know if he's trying to piss on you, so to speak, and just be like, hey, she's mine, just in case, because he is flirting with these other girls. And I was like, is the flirting a tactic to try and get her to step up and have that second conversation that's more serious? Or is the flirting, or is this guy just like, you know, there are also guys like that that want to make sure that like they have, you know, this girl over here is taking care. I just got her snow tires. I own her a little bit, like, but I'm not going to commit to her. But she's not going to go fuck some other guy while I'm in the room because I just bought her. I just bought her snow tires, and like no one's going to be flirting with her. I don't want her, but she certainly will not flirt with anyone else. Like that is kind of the attitude, I think.
I think it might pay off if she backs off a little bit. It seems like she has a little bit of a desperate energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would serve you well if you had a little bit of a like suck my dick energy.
It's hard in your 20s. Like I always say, the thing that came with my 30s is that I'm finally, for the first time in my life, like I can hook up with a guy and have it just be a friends with benefits situation and not guilt myself like crazy for like months. And I think that in your 20s, I think a lot of girls run around with like invisible guns and hold them to men's head and say, like, be in a fucking relationship with me. And I think that that is like the curse of being a girl in your 20s is you want to be in a relationship with guys who could not want to less be in a relationship for the most part. Especially like, you know, thinking he's a former pro athlete, like this guy's feeling himself.
Yeah, you gotta. Sure. Yeah.
you got to make yourself desired. But at the same time, don't, if you really, I know that feeling of really liking someone and not wanting to date someone else for the sake of it. Maybe you should get into a hobby really hardcore.
It sounds like there's not a lot of options.
Not
for
a lot of D in town. So like you might as well learn how to knit and like spend your time knitting. And when he asks where you're at, you're like, I'm at home working on something. And he's like, that's cool that she does stuff.
She doesn't seem as needy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I want her more.
But like him cock blocking her at the bar really is like the confusing thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's sending mixed signals.
I think it's a piss on you type thing where he just wants to make sure that he has you on the back burner in case nothing else works out. Because he knows like, and that's not saying that like you're the last chance. It means that you're probably the best girl that he's dated in a long time. And he knows that about you. But he doesn't want to be in a relationship. He wants to continue to like kind of hook up and hang out with these girls. And if he has 5 girls that he's flirting with at the bar and he happens to be sleeping with all of them at the same time, not on the same night, but like those are all of his you up type people. He probably knows once all those you up type people are gone, you're going to be the one he dates.
And it would serve her well to tap the brakes emotionally right now.
I guess, but I also wonder, it's like, do you want to be with the guy that's fucking every girl in town? Like, I feel like that guy is like, you can never really trust him because it's like, dude, you're insatiable. Like, how would I ever be enough for you? Like, I wasn't enough for you when I was standing right in front of you being like, I like you, let's date. Like, basically, you fucked your way through town and now you're tired of hooking up with girls off Instagram or whatever. And now you want to date me. Like, that's lame. You know, I don't know. I don't know, man. This guy sounds like trouble, though, either way. And I would definitely start to invest your interests in like going on Tinder dates and stuff like that with guys a few towns away. Like expand your Tinder mileage to like 30 miles and be willing to drive. Or date guys who are willing to drive to you, because I think that one of the places I'm from is Marshfield, Massachusetts. It's a summer town. I grew up in Lexington, but I spent my summers in Marshfield and a lot of my family lived there year round. It's very close knit. It's really hard to escape those people. Those townies are real. Like you see the same 10 people every day, like just walking down the street. So, I think it's time you date out of that circle for sure. I don't know. I don't like him.
I agree with that.
I don't like him. Have you ever dated a girl like that was just like mean and like led you along?
No.
Who's this? Hold on. Can I answer this phone call really quick? Hello? Yeah. No, Miguel, it's Molly from I'm coming in tomorrow. You just called me and I'm bringing in like 4 people with me. It's okay. I'm recording a podcast, though, so I got to go. All right, bye.
Let me leave that in.
Sorry, that was my tattoo artist for tomorrow.
What are you getting done?
I'm going to get my grandfather inscribed his third... He dedicated his third book to my grandmother, and it was To Ruth, A Sail, Not an Anchor. And I love A Sail, Not an Anchor, because my grandmother just let my grandfather do whatever he wanted. Not, like, sexually, but, like, they did not sleep in the same room. My grandfather would be up all night long typing on an old-school typewriter. Like, he just was, like... My grandfather was able to be an eccentric genius because my grandmother was so understanding and loving of that. And so I always love that, A Sail, Not an Anchor. Like, that's what you want in life. Like, people talk, you know, people always get those anchor tattoos. I'm like, why would you want to be anchored? Like, you want someone that's going to push you forward. I just thought that was so beautiful.
Yeah. And you know what? There's an irony to that, is that like, if you're with someone who gives you space,
mm-hmm.
a sail,
mm-hmm.
that makes you love that person. The person who's open and allowing freedom,
mm-hmm.
the receiver of that,
yeah,
falls in love so deeply.
True. But not a lot of pregnant ladies would have let their husband go to Peru to do ayahuasca.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so lucky.
Yeah. Like, not a lot of they'd be like, not period.
Yeah,
pregnant
obviously,
or not.
Obviously, I'm speaking for myself.
But like, that's so true. It's so, it's such like, it's so true. And I think that that's like something that when we give relationship advice in general on this podcast, I get very concerned for the girls that are like, he was weird about me going to this. It's like, no, if he's weird about you going somewhere that you want to go, this is not your guy.
It's a pretty obvious red flag.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, if you're not together, you should be allowed to flirt with other people.
My ex wouldn't let me smoke weed. Like, wouldn't let me smoke weed. Like, and I'm like, so you, I could drink myself to death and you'd be fine with that. But like, if I take a like a hit of marijuana, I have to hide that from you because
seems very unenlightened.
That's unenlightened. And also like controlling, like no one should tell you what to put in your body. No one should tell you how to live your life. Everyone should tell you how to encourage, like encourage your dreams. Be your best person. Sail not an anchor, you guys. Miguel.
So you're getting the words?
Yeah. And then small.
What kind of font?
I don't know yet. I haven't figured it out. You want to pick the font?
You don't want me to pick the font.
And then my friend Logan is getting a lemonade tattoo that matches my lemon. And then I'm getting the logo for my production company tattooed on me.
He's going to have yellow? Is it going to be yellow?
Yeah. It's like, I'll show you my lemon later.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I want to get the Velvet Underground banana.
Oh, that's chic. That would be chic.
I can't figure out where I want to get that.
Oh, yeah. That's actually, it's a precarious situation because it's a banana. Shape,
I think maybe like there.
That could be kind of cool. Yeah.
Or on my, where everybody has it on their kind of like tricep area, but I like the idea of it being peeled down. And then if you lift up the t-shirt, it reveals like a pink banana peeled.
I like that a lot.
I don't know.
What about just on the back of your neck?
What about my cheek?
Face tattoos are like literally, I've met so many nice guys where I'm like, I would really date you. I would date you, but you have a face tattoo. And I just don't think I can have sex with someone who has a face tattoo. Like I'd be looking at being like, God, you made such a poor decision. Like, why'd you do that?
Job killer.
Grandpa face tattoo. Like, you don't want that. All right, let's take our next call. Do we have a letter or a call? Okay.
Hey, Malls. Hey, Christina. Hey, guest, if you have one. I'm calling about social media etiquette post-breakup. And this is not for me. This is for my close friend. She was in a relationship for 4 years and they recently broke up. And she was asking me if she should like delete all pictures, all posts and everything of her ex. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. Personally, I've never been involved with someone serious enough to post them on anything. So I've never been in that position. Part of me is like, do you care enough? And the other half of me is like, if it helps you heal, not to see them, out of sight, out of mind. So I don't know. Please advise. Thank you.
Okay. Interesting question. And I have like I have actually recent experience with like this whole thing. So, I was with the guy, Derek. I was with him for like a year and a half. It was a very serious, meaningful relationship. It was like a very, very meaningful relationship. And like, I will never, ever delete the pictures of us from the internet. I just won't. Like, that was such an important part of my life. It always will be. I don't, if anyone that I date in the future that views those pictures existing as a sign of disrespect, doesn't get me and doesn't appreciate that I've lived all these stages of my life to be the person that I am when I meet them. But at the same time, like all the kind of guys that I've dated more casually that I've had a picture up here and there with, I've deleted those pictures because they weren't particularly significant parts of my life. And like, you know, it sucks. Like Derek and I don't speak at all, but I do know that I have a reminder that he cares about me because he's never deleted any of the pictures of us from his social media either. And it's an acknowledgement, I think a silent acknowledgement on both of our ends that like that period of time did in fact happen. It was special and it's, you know, it's over now, but it happened. And, you know, I think 4 years, your friend is going, 4 years is a long period of time. Those are a lot of memories. And in deleting that, you're not just deleting his face, you're deleting the experience that you lived in which you took that picture, whether it be, you know, mountain climbing or sitting on a couch taking a cute selfie. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's like a snapshot at that moment of your life. And I can't imagine being with someone who would give a shit.
Right.
And if I was with someone who was so sensitive about it, I might think about deleting them, but it would have to be like way into the relationship.
I think that a lot of the times that people get uncomfortable about, like, oh, the box full of letters, oh, I found your old letters, I found your, like, you know, whatever, that stuff, that the trinkets that you hold on to from a relationship, I feel like by the time a significant other finds those and then gets angry about them, there's already resentment and jealousy built up in the relationship. Someone really usually only asks you to throw away your pictures unless they are an unreasonable person or you have already asked them to do something similar and they want the same respect back. Like, well, I got rid of this, I would like you to get rid of that.
I did just find a bunch of love letters from mm-hmm. high school.
Yeah.
I had no idea that I was...
Bro probably thought they were funny.
She wasn't interested. and neither was I. It was like, right. Neither was I. I found them and I threw them out. And so the question is about social media etiquette. I mean, I don't know if there is one yet. I don't know, right? I don't know if there's like an agreed upon.
I think it means the same thing
for everybody. It'd be interesting to know if your friend gives a shit about those pictures. What you're saying, you care in some way about your old pictures of you and Derek.
That was a very, very important part of my life. It existed, and to delete it would be dishonest. It would feel like a dishonest portion of my life. Like, you know, like I can't just, you know, show a shot of me on vacation and next to it, the selfie that used to be next to it of the two of us on that beach. Like that, I can't delete that.
You know what that's indicative of for me?
What?
There's the worst part of social media.
Yeah.
And I think this is so obvious.
Yeah.
But maybe it's a newsflash for gross people. But so much of it is performative.
Yes.
And I know I've heard a couple friends recently being like, I don't really care about the amount of likes I get, but like, I'm going to post a bunch of pictures of my dogs because I know they're just up there and I like to go and look at them. I like to open up my own library and they're up there. And I'm not comparing Derek to a dog, but you're saying like, it's meaningful for you to have that just part of
I'll also not lie and say that there is a performative element of it as well. Like, it's like, you know, that to me, that relationship was in my life, a life that I've lived very much online, historical in my life. It was a very, like, you know, it was a long time and we did so many great things together and have so many great memories. And of course, a lot of like complicated and sad ones too, but the good times were great. And I wouldn't go and delete a bunch of blog posts about, you know, a time where I was struggling with money just because I can pay my electric bill this month. Like I've always been honest about my life online, and to go back and to take that away would feel like a lie. Like, I feel like that's a lie to delete something that was important to me. That's part of a story. Because that's really what an Instagram is it's watching someone's life develop. And that's what blog is watching someone's life develop over years and over time. And something about Snapchats that's interesting is that you can't really create that ongoing long story. But I mean, I have people who call this podcast who are like, I've been watching your YouTube videos since 2008. Like, that's, you know, to like try and like eternal sunshine, like my audience isn't fair. Like, that's not cool.
I feel very shut down that you say that it's there's a performative aspect to your online life. I don't know
why. You were the one who just started it and said the whole online life is very performative. And like, here's the thing is that I also very early on used my personality to get a foot in the door and like using that online and writing from my own personal voice.
Right.
And so when I say it's like not deleting those photos is performative, I guess I mainly mean that to delete them would be an incomplete picture of that part of my life. It would be like going back and deleting scenes in a movie because they aren't relevant right now. When in fact, that part of my life is incredibly relevant to who I am today.
It might be a semantics thing.
Yeah.
I just don't find you, I find you less performative and more raw and open, and you're like presenting something as it is authentically rather than putting on a show.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Here's
I don't know.
The thing. No, you're right. I'm not. Well, here's the thing is that there are people who are very well. They're very well. And I don't mean like aesthetically. They're very well groomed. Like their situation is very like they make sure they never say anything negative. Like all of their pictures are visually beautiful. Like that is definitely a lifestyle that I do not subscribe to. Like, I'm like, hey, here's me with a fucking burn on my face.
Yeah.
Like, you know, here's me like literally crying. Like, I don't, you know, it's, but at the same time, I'm not under any, like, I also am very aware that it's part of creating a story that people are following. And like, that's, yeah.
I forget. Did that caller say that person, they're in a new relationship and should she?
She's just saying like they broke up after 4 years and she's not sure how to handle her.
No, not yet. You don't delete them yet. You leave them up. It's part of your life and you cross that bridge when you enter a new relationship.
The big sting is the deactivation of your relationship status on Facebook. That's the big sting. Nothing hurts more than that. Like that takes, I've every relationship where we've been in a status situation and then had to take it down, whether we were speaking or not or hated each other or whatever, we've had great reverence for waiting to do it at the right time and like not springing it on the other person and therefore everyone in their life that this relationship is over. Like to the extent I couldn't be brought to do it, that I just had to give my phone to someone else and said, disconnect me from like being his girlfriend on everything.
My Facebook status says in a relationship.
In a relationship.
I've been married for like 7 years.
That's a relationship. So.
Well, I was wondering because, you know, this is a new problem considering like the technology. And it used to be where it's like if you didn't want to look back at those memories, you put them in a box and like that's your breakup box for that person.
Yeah.
And like emotionally...
Oh,
like,
I got a box.
It manifests, this box is in a manifestation of your like emotional and putting it away. But since you don't have that, you know, visual to put that away, like I understand why deleting it would be the equivalent of that.
Yeah. You know, it's true. It's true. Well, 4 years is a long time. It's a really long time. And I'm sure that you had a lot of good memories and like just keep, that's why I keep my photos up is to honor the good memories and not honor like, you know, what was ultimately like, oh my God, devastating. So let's take our next call.
Hey, Malls, Christina and guests. This is Martha. I'm calling to let you know, Molly, that I will be at the Women's March. And I'm very excited. And we had snapped about it a little bit, but I am all set. Me and my best friend are going. We are taking a detour from our vacation to make it out there. And I am really excited, and I hope to see you there. And I hope a ton of us go. So, yeah, have a good one. Bye.
Hi, Malls. Hi, Christina. Hi, Please Advise Nation. My name is Lucy. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. And Malls, I know you are attending the Women's March in about a week now. I will be attending as well with my mom and my sisters. And I was just wondering if there are any other Please Advise listeners, which I am sure that there are, attending, because I think it would be the greatest thing in the world to plan a meetup of sorts on that day to get us all together. You know, it's going to be such a meaningful day. It's going to be so impactful. And I listen to the show every week. I don't know anyone else that listens to Please Advise. So to meet other fans, I don't know. I think it could make me so happy. So if anybody is interested, let's make it happen. My number is 410-790-0630. Emails lcyschultz@gmail.com. Thanks, everyone. Take care. Bye.
You know, okay, so first of all, yay, I'm so excited that both of you are going. I want to start by saying that I tweeted out, you know, like who all is going, because I got some really interesting information that about just safety and how to protect yourself during the march. If you are marching in any city, DC is, of course, going to be like a very hot button city. And again, the reason why I'm going is because I think that this is like one of the most important events that will take place historically in my lifetime. And I feel like I need to be there for that so that, you know, I can tell the kids I'm not having someday about it. But like, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm really scared. Like I do well with crowds. I do well with emergency, but like, and I'm a quick responder, but I've never dealt with tear gas. I've never dealt with riots. I've never dealt with, like doxing. I've never dealt with having my phone cloned. I've never dealt with anything like this. And you know, I have some friends who, in my personal opinion, are being kind of flippant about it. And they're being like, no, like, don't worry about it. Like DC police, like also DC police hate Donald Trump. And it's like, no, but people are coming from all over the world for this inauguration. And the Women's March is the day after. And odds are most people have extended their flight and their stay, and they're going to be there as well for whatever reason they want to be. And I spoke to one of my Twitter followers, this guy, Ted Leo, who, one of his main jobs is photographing, protests in particular. And he said to me, like, most of the information that you got in terms of, you know, having safety goggles and a backpack, having something to cover your face in a backpack, they're important. It's good to have that stuff on hand. It's important to have antacid on hand, because if you do get into a tear gas situation, it's important, just in case anyone in any city needs to know this, water and vinegar do not fight tear gas. The only thing that fights it is antacid. So like literally just pick up a couple bottles of it. I got like 3 on Amazon for $17, I think. There are some questions about whether or not it's lawful to cover your face in DC. I think for the march, they actually have changed these rules. I got some follow-up information from someone who originally told me that it's unlawful to cover your face in DC. If I was to cover my face, it would only be to keep my face safe. I actually am planning on live podcasting at the event, which is another reason why I'm going, is I'm bringing a portable recorder and a mic, and I want to talk to people and find out why they're there. And it's going to be an advice-themed podcast, of course, because it's Please Advise, but I'm going to try and talk to as many women as possible. Look, I can't promise a Please Advise meetup at the march, because I don't feel comfortable doing that, but I will try to put together something for that Friday evening, the 20th. I'm nervous about going out the night of the inauguration, but if you guys know of a bar, I think that I'm actually staying in an Airbnb like decently far away enough that I'm not worried for my safety there. So if I can reach out to you, I'll reach out to you, Lucy. Maybe we can find a bar and I'll make a small announcement of a meetup. We'll put it like on the Tumblr page or something that's not flashy, and we'll get people's attention on Twitter. Yeah, I have a bunch of friends who are going to this. My old roommate, Sarah Liz, is driving down. If we meet up at the march, I think that's cool and I think that's great. I just want everyone to know that, like, from everything that I have heard, you're going to know the people who are there to cause trouble when you see them, and just avoid them. And so, like, you know, I talk to you guys about awareness a lot, about having physical awareness, about being a, just a general self-aware person and having like your spidey sense up. And like, I'm telling you guys, like, this is the day to look alive, like be aware of what's going on around you. Like if someone's sneaking up on you, like you, there's going to be, there's lots of things. There's snitch jacking is a thing that is happening. There's people that try to fool people who are there for a peaceful protest. They tell them that they're part of a peaceful protest and they wind up in a situation. I also got a really, really scary piece of advice, which is to have your full name, your phone number, the phone numbers of anyone important to you, and the phone number of a lawyer written on your body in Sharpie. And, you know, part of me doesn't know why the fuck I'm doing this. Like, I'm terrified. But I'm hopeful that the good parts of the day will be good, and that that you know, no one's an asshole, and that no one I know gets hurt. And as exciting as it would be to meet up with everyone, I think it's most important that everyone's really safe. One thing I hate is it stopped me from volunteering at lots of Thanksgivings in LA is that they demand that if you're a woman who wants to volunteer, that you have a male volunteer with you. And that's really bummed me out because I'm like, yo, I don't have a guy that like wants to come with me right now, but I still want to give homeless people mashed potatoes or like wash dishes or something. And like, I really think it's important that every group has a man in it. I really do. I think that that's physically intimidating to other people and lets other people know that like you're being taken care of. Other than that, like there are some, I'll link to some of the organizations you do. There's a Women's March site where you can register so people will know that you're in attendance and they will be sending you, meetups, updates and stuff like that. I will try to do the best that I can. I'll try to do the best that I can to have as many, links and stuff up for you guys as possible before I go. But I'm excited everyone's going. I'm just really taking the, I just want everyone to know I'm taking this really seriously. It is a day of empowerment, but you have to be very prepared. And that includes, unfortunately, the fact that there could be a lot of people there who are not happy for women. Because, by the way, America hates women. I say that all the time, but like this is the sad thing is that this is should be a peaceful march, but America hates women, so it's probably not going to be. And that goes for literally every city. So, and you've seen the rioting in every city. It's possible. And like you could even just get trampled by a police officer because you're not being aware. So just be aware. Christina, do you have anything to say about this?
There was one more letter we got where someone was basically asking, like, she's been having trouble dealing with the fact that some of her cis white male friends don't care about it or think that it's important for them to participate. And so, like, she wanted to know your thoughts on that as well.
I mean,
how do you get men to care about women's issues?
Your body, your physical presence there counts. I mean, it's a political statement.
That's why I'm going, is because I feel like I'm not doing enough by vote, like just donating to Planned Parenthood. Like the best thing I can do is be like, I'm offering up my body and saying, hi, I'm here. I'm showing up. In terms of getting, you know, I haven't really thought about men, to be honest, which has been like a nice thing. Like, and I know that that's probably annoying to you that your friends don't care, but like, I don't care if men care. I care that other women care. And I think that that's the point of this. And I think that that's what this is about, is it's about us sticking together. It's not about worrying about straight men for the day. Like, it's really, it's about us and our rights and our place in this country. And yes, it sucks. It sucks big balls. But like, if you look back on like the Million Man March, like back in the day, and the way that that has historically impacted our country, you know, no one's talking about who wasn't there. People are talking about who was there. So that really is what matters in my mind. You know, it's like planning a birthday party. It doesn't matter who doesn't show up. It matters who does show up. Okay. Well, I think that's our episode. Dan, sorry, that last question had nothing to do with you. Do you want to say anything else?
I mean, I like to say I don't hate women.
Yeah, you don't hate women.
No. I think there's plenty of women who hate women.
Yeah, there are. The system is not, that's why I say America hates women. The system is not set up for women. It's not. And it's quite unfortunate. We see it even in like entertainment alone. Like, let's just look at entertainment alone. It's always like female writer, female comedian, funny gal, blah, blah, blah. Like, it has to always be this like preface. And the reason why is because look at this creature who slipped through the cracks. And like, I'm telling you something, like the most success I've had in my career is when I'm working with a white man. And the reason why, the only show that I've sold in recent, no, the two shows I've sold are because a white guy was in the room with me as my person. And the, for some reason, the presence of a white male is very soothing to executives. Whereas to me, like me alone,
who also tend to be white males.
And or even women. But as to me alone, who's standing there, they look at me and they're like, well, what's this girl going to do? Like, who knows? She's crazy. Like, she could come back, like, you know, I don't know. Like, what is she going to get her period all over the script and like throw it? I mean, like, what they don't, I don't know what they think. But like, the presence of a white male certainly does push things along. So, that's just, you know, that's in the, you know, pay gap, like everything. America has not been set up for in a woman's favor ever. And we all thought this election was going to be like, finally, this is the last like hurrah for like white men that have been like coasting by on their hatred and their racism and their misogyny and using religious beliefs to impact our country in horrific ways. It didn't happen. We're set up for another 4 years of a guy that perpetuates rape culture, that, you know, spent $25 million getting himself out of a rape lawsuit. Like, you know, our president
has been on record discriminating against people for.
Yeah. Our president elect is a racist and a rapist. So there's that.
Well, there's women who, when he said he can grab women by the pussy, that he grabs women by the pussy. That's important.
Yeah.
It's something he does
actively.
That, so there were a ton of women who didn't care.
They were like, he can grab my pussy. Yeah. Like, or even so, just like,
and then recently we were on a message board, looking at, someone was like, look, the Affordable Care Act saved my life. I'd be dead without it. Pre-existing condition, blah, blah, blah. And then there was a bunch of comments that were like, fuck you. You should be dead. I can't believe my taxpayer dollars had to like fucking pay for your life.
Yeah. This
and
guy.
So that really is like, this is really complicated to talk about, right?
Right.
All of anything.
Yeah.
Anything political. But if you really boil it down, there is such a difference. There's such a difference in values.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking real. Mm-hmm. It's real. Like, someone being like, you should be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know where you go from there. I remember I asked, there's someone in my life that I care, you know, someone in my family. I was like, you don't care that he said he grabs women by the pussies? And she's like, no, I don't. And it's just despair. It's so devastating and heart sickening.
And do you want to know what I think part of that is too? Is that it's a lack of imagination. Like, it's like,
I have a theory.
Yeah.
I have a theory that it has to do with millennia of you're with a man that's hunting and gathering and like maybe brutally raping you at the end of the night. And maybe that's comforting because you're safe and he's providing for you.
Mm.
And that it's so actually deep seated from an evolutionary perspective. Mm-hmm. Because it makes no fucking sense right now.
Mm-mm. No, and Dan, you remember, like, a lot of our audience probably does not remember. I remember growing up in a conservative family. we have come, it's shocking how far we've come in our dialogues about everything from, I mean, like when a girl talked about rape back in the day, it was like, well, she asked for it. Well, what was she wearing? Like now we live, I mean, people still do stuff like that, but we live in a world where a majority of the people in my life anyway know that that's wrong. It's crazy how far we've come in 20 years. Like,
but 20 years is nothing.
I mean, it's nothing. But like, it's just, it's like, I can't even believe that in my lifetime, there would be headlines that were like, Chelsea Clinton is ugly. Like, I remember they called like her an ugly child. And like, I remember reading that and being like, how are you going to call a little girl ugly in the news? Like, how people being like Monica Lewinsky, like talking about her body, like talking about this, like the fact that that's how that was handled, like, I mean, my whole thing after the OJ trial was like, there is no one in this country after the OJ series was like, there's no one in our country owes a bigger apology than Marsha Clark. Like, literally, we owe her an apology. And every woman like her that was disrespected in her job because she was a chick and the way that she looked and she was doing her best and trying her hardest to keep up in terms of just like this crazy, insane case with all this money and power behind it and trying to, you know, get her hair done so that people won't make fun of her, and it just backfires and they make even more fun of her. It just like, it just makes me feel sick to know that like, at least now there's sites like Jezebel or whatever that always have that counterpoint. There's always that counterpoint floating around online. Now there used to not be that counterpoint. It would only be if you had like an extremely woke family member or like someone who was exposed to stuff in the, you know, like, do you remember growing up in the 90s like that? Like just some of the, how much it's changed?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was just even thinking when I was in high school, I was kind of like an anomaly because I was not tolerating a lot of behavior of the men or the boys in my life at the time, mm-hmm. where they would just talk about girls a certain way. And I was just like so disgusted. And they're like, oh, you're a when feminist was still kind of a dirty word. In high school, it wasn't cool to like assert your...
Feminazi, like it was like, no, it actually was like, it was like,
you hate men,
you're a witch. No, yeah. Literally, there was a group of girls that were called witches at our school, and not because they practiced Wiccan, because they were early feminists. They were punk rock girls. Like, they were very, very cool. And like, Amanda Palmer went to my fucking high school. Like, we had cool chicks in our town, and like, they were called weird. They were outcasts, you know, and like, they grow on to be these like icons. And like, those are, I don't know, man. It just bums me out. It just bums me out. And I'm excited that this march is happening. I'm so sad that there is such a, I'm so sad that there's such also a cloud over the whole thing too, because I think that a lot of us optimists walk around thinking that it's going to be a joyful day. And I can't even just tell you how my heart hit my asshole and then the floor when I read that list of precautionary things before the march. Like, I live my life trying to be as positive as possible. I wouldn't have bought the ticket if I knew it was going to be so violent. Now I'm glad I did, potentially violent, but I thought I was going to be like with my sisters, like marching in the street. Like, I was going to bring wags. Like, I thought it was going to be like a nice, fun day. But it's not.
There's a good chance it's going to be.
Yeah.
And you have to be aware and prepared.
Yeah. It's not like a town parade, you know? It is, but it's not. All right. Anyway, you guys, that was episode 119 of Please Advise. You guys, thank you so much for listening. Dan, where can people find you on social media and other things about you?
Well, I'm on Twitter, but I'm kind of like, I never tweet. I mean, You don't care. You shouldn't find
me. Just watch the show you work for. What show? Tell everyone the show that you work
for.
Well,
I'm on Chelsea.
Yeah.
On Netflix.
And you're
fairly
on
often.
Yeah.
And I kind of have like one note. I'm like a one-dimensional performer.
That's good.
Or, you know.
Did I tell you? So I saw the meddler and I literally recognized you because you just like walked by for a second and you just say like, hey. And I was like, that's Dan. And I like couldn't believe
I play a director in The Meddler.
And
I love that movie.
It's so great. It's
my
so
mom
great.
And I watched it over the holidays because I was like, Mom, well, it's kind of a little bit her.
Yeah.
And also the character comes from the neighborhood that I grew up in.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it was a cute little throwaway.
Well, the writer was who set Dan up with his wife.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was a great movie. My mom loved it, too.
So many gifts from Loreen.
Yeah.
So many gifts.
The Meddler is a great movie.
It's highly recommended. I think it was my favorite movie of the year.
Vanity Fair called it the number one movie of the year.
I would say Richard Lawson said it was like the best movie of 2016.
It definitely was. And so did so many people I know thought that. Lindsay Weber, too. A lot of people, not just people who made the list, but a lot of people who I respect said that that was one of the best movies of the year. Go watch it and watch it with your mom, for fuck's sake. Like, it's very therapeutic.
We had fun watching it together. It was great.
That scene where Rose Byrne's character is just like, every day, like, I go and my phone rings and, like, I think it's going to be something. Like, I think it's going to be a job. I think it's going to be a guy. And it's, like, some, like, telemarketer or something like that. And that scene, like, really broke my heart because, like, that is the thing that I wish I could say to my mom where I'm, like, you don't understand, like, the tension I live in every day where it's, like, every time I open my email box, I feel like my life could change. Like, you don't – it's, like, fucking – and it turns you into a monster a little bit. And, like, I just related to that character so much. And it made me want to be nicer to my mom. And it also made me wish my mom was richer. And it – yeah, no, it was a really great movie. Really, really great. Marines. And you just stole the show, so –
That's a lie.
I knew it was you right away. I was so proud of myself. Do you know I could pass you on the street?
You don't have an eagle eye?
No, I could pass you on the street and not recognize you. Like, do you understand that? Like, you and I could be the only two people in the salad dressing aisle at the grocery store. And if you said hi to me, I would act like I saw a ghost.
Yeah, so you have that in common with Brooke where, like, you guys are gifted verbally and mentally. And then, like,
visually just
like we're driving down the highway and I'm like, oh, that was Hillary Duff driving the opposite way. And she'll be like, what?
Yeah, no. Oh, Ed will be like, let's say there was someone not in my house 2 miles down at the end of the driveway. He'd be like, oh, I saw that guy on Tinder. And I'd be like, how do you know this man's face? Like, how do you know you saw his face on Tinder once? Like, how do you know this man's face? Ed can spot anyone. It's crazy.
How many times has Ed done the show?
Ed has done the show probably like five. But you know, Ed is can be very conservative on this show. He can be very buck wild, but he can also be, you'd be surprised at how you'd be surprised. Ed. Well, you can, you know, he's trying to, now that he's in a more serious job, he's trying to be more a little careful about what he says. Ed is always careful about what he says. Like, he whispers the name of everyone. Like, have you noticed that? Like, when we go out, have you noticed that Ed, like, literally whispers the name of anyone even remotely famous? Like, if he was talking to you, like, he'd be like,
yeah.
And you'd be like, yeah. What? And like, and it's like, just say Chelsea. Like, he knows that that's his boss's name. Like, just say it out loud. He's the biggest whisperer. So sometimes he comes on the show and he can be very reserved. But once someone called in saying that they didn't use condoms and Ed went off.
What did he say? He was a slut from the 90s or something?
Yeah, he was really.
Yeah, that's not cool. What is he, a chaser?
I think so. Well, no, he has an open marriage. I know, it was wild. It was like an open marriage situation. He was actually really asking if he should do an enema in an anal douche every time before he goes and hooks up with someone. And Ed was like caught on. He's like, let me back up. I'm stuck on the condom thing. Like, do whatever you need to do to clean your asshole.
Yeah,
but like,
you know what? That kind of reminds, every once in a while, Dan Savage is like, I mean, every far and few in between, like, he'll just be like, you're an asshole. Someone will ask something.
Yeah.
Like, fuck off.
Yeah, no, we love it when we get a good asshole call, too. I love Dan Savage. He was the inspiration. Our inspiration for this was I used to write an advice column called Please Advise. Christina produced a radio story, little fake rate, This American Life moment about her parents, how they met, and I always loved it. We were wanting to make changes in our lives. And I said, we both love Dan Savage. We both love this medium. Why don't we do a podcast together? And we said this at the farm at the Grove. And things have never been the same since. Dan, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. I hope I didn't disappoint.
No, not at all. I would love to have you back. I absolutely would love to have you back if you would join us.
I will.
You know what I would love to have you do, too? I really want Brooke to do this, too. I let her skip this season because I know she's so busy. But I really want you to do my Lifetime Original Movie podcast where you watch a Lifetime Original Movie and you come over and you, like, recap it with me.
I have a great guest for you.
Who?
Sarah Colonna.
Oh my God, I would love her.
You know her?
I don't know her, but several people have told me like she loves Lifetime
Sarah
movies.
Sarah lives for Lifetime movies. She's really funny.
And that makes me sad for Sarah because I also live for Lifetime movies, but I literally am the only person who has a Lifetime original movie podcast. Like everything has five podcasts.
Email introduce you.
Yeah, let's do that. I would love that.
She's great.
And Lifetime Movie Club is actually sponsoring next season. So fuck yeah. Okay, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Talk to you soon.